It's Tuesday, August 13th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 307 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 58 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
So this particular show
is about not having Chris on, so we make fun of him incessantly.
Which is different than every other show we do.
Yes.
In that it's episode 307, and no show before this has been 307.
That's true.
No, the show we're going to do today, we've got several things that all kind of fit within a single theme. And that theme is endings. And no, this is not our farewell show. Sorry to those of you who wish it was. The main thing that we want to talk about is ways to end campaigns. All right, we're going to come back to that. So that's going to be kind of our more meaty RPG topic. But as we were setting this up amongst ourselves and doing our kind of pre-show planning and discussion, and we try not to like fully discuss the idea, because then really all that we're left with is reciting the same things we talked about when it actually comes time to record. But we do try to at least kick the idea around a little bit just to ferret out some of its aspects and also make sure that we actually have enough to say on the subject to fill a reasonable amount of time with it. And one of the things that came up in the middle of that was Chris threw out the ending of Lost, and we'll get to how that ties into role-playing games later. And Wayne came back with what I believe is an astute and accurate and brilliant observation worthy of an honorary doctorate at all seven of the seven sisters.
And that observation is, if we want to talk about horrible endings, we can talk about the ending of Quantum Leap.
Do you guys believe that an intellectual property really is only as good as its ending? This is something that actually one of our forum users, Ezra Vett, put forward. And I don't think he meant it quite in this context. But nonetheless, the statement he made is that a story is as good as its ending. And taken in a vacuum like that, taken out of the context of his post. So admitting that I'm probably misrepresenting his point here. But taking it from that standpoint, I partially agree. Mm-hmm. Because I really do think there is value in the journey. And I can think of series that had absolutely horrible endings, but there was so much value in the journey there that I still enjoy and will even go back and rewatch these series, even if there comes a point where I kind of tune out because I know the bad is coming.
Enterprise.
Yeah, Enterprise.
I know how you feel about the ending of Enterprise.
The last episode of Enterprise, not what should have been
the last episode. Was great. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the two-parter about the Mars thing.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
That was great.
Powerful,
the whole thing,
poignant.
With Jonathan Frakes and
I don't know what you're talking
Troy.
About.
Yeah, that didn't happen, but... You know, I can certainly, though, see how you can look at something that was good along the way, and sometimes the ending is so bad that it really does kind of derail the whole thing. You feel like you're cheated. Like, everything you invested in it just plain didn't matter. Like, man, I want my life back. Right. I felt that way after Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that thing was going off the rails, at least in my mind, back at about halfway through season two.
Yeah.
But that ending was just, to me, so freaking atrocious that by the time I was done, it's like, wow, every minute I've invested in this show, I want back.
Have you ever ran into a fan of a show like that where they are such an uber fan where you're talking to them about the ending and they're totally just, oh man, the whole show was great. I loved every minute of it. The ending was great. The middle was great. The beginning was great. The whole thing was great. And they start vehemently defending the ending, which you were talking about is, you know, like Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, I love the show, but the ending was terrible. In fact, the lead up to the ending was really bad. And they start defending it like really hard. And it's kind of like
the lady doth protest too much.
Yeah. And it's just like, are they trying to convince you,
you know,
or
it's
themselves?
Because I was just talking about not this, but something unrelated with Laura. And I said that when I look at people who are debating something, I could typically see, I guess, one of about four archetypes of the way people debate something. One is people who have a view and are secure about that view, but remain quiet about it. The second is people who have a view, are secure in that view, and want to try and win other people over to their way of thinking for whatever reason. The third type is people who have a view, are secure in that view, and are angry at anyone who disagrees with them. But then the fourth kind, which is the one type for which I have the least respect, even less respect than I have for type number three. And I don't have a lot of respect for type number three, is the people where the more I listen to them, the more convinced I become that it's not me they're trying to convince.
Right.
That they are just violently bunkered behind something And Bunker's an awesome character. Sentinels of the Multiverse, by the way.
I was wondering if you were going to be able to resist.
This is going
to
be like, popular. I wish it, from this point forward, it's going to be like Pee-wee's Playhouse with a secret word. Anytime Iron Eagle says Bunker, there's going to be this whole crowd of people and puppets in my mind screaming.
So you played Sentinels of the Multiverse.
I did play Sentinels. And by the way, if you have not played Sentinels of the Multiverse, first of all, it's made by some guys that are from a really great town.
St. Louis?
Yeah, they're St. Louis locals.
Really?
Yes, they're locals.
Why don't we get them on?
We should.
I mean, we've had too many interviews lately, but
what the hell? We'll give it a rest. But yeah, eventually we'll get them on. But the point being, that's a great freaking game. If you're
love
not familiar
it.
With it, it was a Kickstarter project. I didn't back it on Kickstarter.
I didn't even know about it until it was all done.
Yeah. I never played it until this weekend, and I went right out and bought it.
But it's kind of like...
I'm a cheapskate.
It's like Arkham Horror. In that it's a cooperative game where you play versus the game itself, but you play superheroes taking on a supervillain, which is played by a game mechanic. But instead of a board, you just have like a deck of cards. Yeah. Man, it's a lot of fun. And the way that the heroes can kind of synergize and play off of each other is outstanding. Then they have this other deck, which is like the environment deck, where when you flip it over, it like, oh, okay, well, you're like in this dome on Mars, and part of the dome is starting to collapse, which is going to do something to everybody. It's hurting the bad guy, it's hurting you, but if you don't get it under control, these things keep occurring until somebody gets it under control.
I love that each hero seems to play differently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and they made a story for it all. You know, they have this universe, it's comic booky sort of universe and story, and all the heroes and all the villains are consistent in that, and each of the heroes have nemesis villains and that are there that you play against and such.
So anyway, the point being though that I've run into people where they bunker scream real loud behind a view and they're so angry about it.
Yes.
And once again, the more I listen to them, I get the sense they're not just angry, I get the sense that they themselves are unsure of what they believe and are trying to convert you as a way of validating their own way of thinking. And now let's take this out of any of the usual things people bicker and argue about, like politics, religion, and which ending of Mass Effect 3 to pick.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, none of them. Just pop the disc out. Microwave it. It'll be equally colorful, and you'll at least understand why it had the ending it did.
Don't you wish you could do that with a politician, too?
Yeah.
But I'm curious what category people fall into that like something, and everybody else hates it, and they get so frustrated that everyone keeps talking bad about the thing that they like, that that's what makes them vehement like that.
I'm category three with Doctor Who. I have a love of the show. Here's the thing. I don't like ongoing shows. I'm not a nostalgic person. I love Doctor Who, which has been ongoing since 1963. Because I'm nostalgic about it.
All right.
So it's the exception that proves the rule, but I see myself in these discussions being that third person where someone says, you know what? I'm just not a Doctor Who fan. I just don't really care for it. And then my blood starts boiling and I'm like, what the hell am I doing?
That's kind of where I'm at. And I try to, I'm imperfect, obviously, but I do my best to try and stay in category one or two because of the fact it's just pragmatism.
Right.
You know, there are times in my life where I've had to get angry to stand up for myself. And maybe in the process, I've gotten somebody else to back down. I cannot think of a single time at any point anywhere in my entire life where me screaming and yelling at somebody has changed their mind.
Right.
It's just, it's pointless.
All right. Wow, your well-constructed argument that you're screaming at the top of your lungs really changed my world.
Precisely, doesn't make me happen. you know, what I want to say. But anyway, all right, so let me give an example. The original V miniseries, both of them. So I'm not going to talk
about... Huge fan.
Right. I'm not going to talk about the original V TV series, which, by the way, was freaking awful. If you don't know what I'm talking about, they made a TV series after the original V miniseries. There was the first two parts about the aliens showing up. Then they came back later and did three more parts, which were written by a different writer.
It's called W.
Yes. It was V part two. Wah. And... they came back when they were writing Whoa with a different author and they concluded the series. I mean, so to speak. And then they came back later and tried to draw it out into a television show, which was just absolutely horrible. Now, this is all prior to the 2004 reboot. But V, I thought all five parts were a great series. And I went back and rewatched them actually just about a year or two ago. And one thing that surprised me because I expected
lots of shoulder pads.
Yes, it's dated in terms of the fashion and such. But I expected this to be something like rewatching the Transformers cartoon where I was just going to be sitting there feeling embarrassed for my younger self. And the series holds up surprisingly well. The themes, the acting, even the special effects. I'm not saying it's like, wow, this is Shakespeare, but but it really was pretty darn good. And it holds up very well until you get to the last 5 or 10 minutes. And for anyone who has never seen the original V miniseries, I'm going to spoil the very, very tail end of it.
Oh, no, it's 30 years old now.
What? Yeah. But on top of that, it is so freaking horrible that you're fine. Just shut the whole thing off before this occurs anyway. But there comes a point in the series where a woman gets pregnant with a human alien hybrid, which, of course, as they always have to do in television and movies, goes from baby to child capable speech in 20 minutes, because that's a whole lot easier to cast, which is a trope I'm really getting sick of, Falling Skies. And this child is just a background character of no real import until the very end, when one of the main alien bad guys is going to set one of the motherships to explode, which will apparently detonate with sufficient force to render the Earth like a meteor had hit it. It's going to be nearly uninhabitable or thrown back into the Stone Age, whatever the case is going to be. And they can't get it up out into the atmosphere fast enough or out into space fast enough. And they're trying to disarm it and break the code. Any of these would have been fine endings. Instead, this little girl walks up to the controls, puts her hand on it, and for no reason whatsoever, this has been set up nowhere in the series as part of the way things work, she starts glowing with energy and the ship just shuts down. It's entire like destruction.
Magic.
Yes, precisely. It's our favorite ending, Chad. She all but turns into a being of light to travel the galaxy.
Wait, now, have we told you about Dan and I's favorite ending?
Yes, this is the best ending to any science fiction. Somebody transcends into a being of light and travels the galaxy.
Yes.
For no reason. But anyway, the point being, horrible ending, but I still love that series. I would, if that series was in
it
right
didn't ruin
now,
it for you.
I would rewatch that series. It was not ruined by its ending the way the Battlestar Galactica was. And by the way, Blood and Chrome, if you've not seen it, go check it out. Holy crap, that was awesome.
I'm done with Battlestar.
I understand that.
Battlestar used me and abused
Chad,
me.
Chad, I understand that. I was on the same level. Mm-hmm. I watched Blood and Chrome like in the middle of a
cool
stroke
name.
Or something.
You thought it was Sharknado.
I thought it was Sharknado. It turns out it was Blood and Chrome.
Awesome.
It was holy. Yeah. Blood and Chrome? That's really freaking good.
I haven't watched it yet, but I was pulled back in by the plan.
I was pulled back in by the fact that Ronald Moore has nothing to do with it. But anyway. So what about you guys? What is there a series that you have seen where the ending was bad and either that did or did not ruin it for you, and why?
Part of it for me, I think, is what
that's
the
great
build-up.
One, Chad. I'm sorry, Chris isn't here. It was reflex.
But I was going into a knock on a show that Chris loves.
Oh, please continue.
Oh, yes,
you have my attention.
Part of it for me depends on the, you know, how much lead up went into it. Quantum Leap, for example, horrible ending, doesn't ruin the show. The show itself isn't very good, but at the time I enjoyed it.
At the time it was wonderful.
At the
exactly.
Time, yeah,
but you can't go back.
No. But it never built up to that ending.
No,
the ending
that
just
ending
came.
It's like the ending of Voyager, where the whole show is great.
I'm sorry.
No, Enterprise. Sorry.
Yeah, what?
Sorry. I did this on the way.
This is the second time he's done this today.
Wayne and I were talking about this, and I did it on
the
way.
You actually got me pause there. I'm like, wait a minute.
The whole series, all of Voyager, was fantastic.
Yeah.
But see, in comparison, Lost spent seasons building up to an ending that was horrible.
I could not sit through a whole episode of
Lost. Lost lived up to its name. It lost from the very get-go.
It ruined the whole show for me.
Kept on losing.
Like, a lot of shows like Battlestar Galactica, I can still go back and watch the first few seasons and enjoy them.
Oh, sure.
Lost, I can't sit down and watch it without knowing it's building up to this ending.
Well, see,
because
I think
everything builds to that ending.
That's part of why BSG gets me, because even though Ronald Moore admitted, I believe, in later interviews and such, that he was all but making up as he went, he at least tried to give the sense that it was planned, such that the early seasons have the appearance of foreshadowing the heinousness that comes at the end, which I think for me would make it very, very difficult to rewatch, even though I think there was one episode in there, and I'll try to put the episode name in the show notes, so I don't remember the name of the episode. There's one episode in there that's probably in my top 10 episodes of TV shows I have ever seen. And I could probably watch that one episode again and again and again.
I'm going to take a wild guess here. Is it the first one after the pilot where they keep jumping in every 30?
No, it's the one where they are trying to raid an old mining facility, and it's a space battle episode, and they're trying to outmaneuver and out-strategize the Cylons to raid this base for supplies.
Because that one, it's either 22 minutes, 32, whatever the number is.
The middle one. That was a good one.
It is one of my top five TV moments ever.
I did not watch the show. Sopranos was another one.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either, but
yeah,
I heard that one.
I watched it.
It was going, it was weird, it was kooky, it was interesting, people loved it, and then the last 10 minutes of the last episode, it just walks right off a cliff.
Yeah.
To my understanding, again, I haven't watched.
Now, here's a question. Someone who did watch Sopranos, did the ending of the finale, which was like everyone thinks their TV set is broken, did that ruin the series for you? Or can you still watch the series and just accept the ending's horrible?
No, it didn't. It didn't ruin the series for me because you can still go back and watch all the other episodes and they're still very good, very solid episodes. What they were doing with that ending was literally the guy decided, I don't want to end this conclusively. I'm going to fade to black so that you as the individual viewer get to decide how it ended yourself. Personally, I hate that. I don't like that because there's no closure, because it's like, I've been watching this show from the very beginning.
Entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been watching this from the very beginning. I want to see the ending. I want to see the vision. I've invested in this. However many, again, it's HBO. So if it was like 8 seasons, I've been watching this thing for the last 20 years because it takes you that long to get the goddamn seasons out, and then you're just gonna fade to black and not tell us what happens.
Yeah,
because and we have to wait until 2013 for Gandolfini to die.
Yeah,
but
the
I
didn't get to pick the beginning, the middle, the latter part. Anything that you are picking while cashing your checks, why is it not suddenly on me to write the ending? Yeah,
and it's just like, to me, I don't know, a lot of people will yell at me and say, oh my God, but that's so artistic and it's so avant-garde. And I'm like, no, I think it's lazy writing. It's bullshit for the writer to do that at the very end, to say, you know what, we're not going to give you an ending. You can think of it yourself. I don't like it.
I'm not saying you don't like it, because obviously you don't, and that's pretty valid, and your reasons are absolutely valid. I think that works sometimes with some things. A TV show where there's this big long thing and you've been following the characters and there's all these character threads and you're watching the character threads close and then new ones come up and then they just chunk, walk off a cliff like that. Horrible writing. Yeah, that was a mistake. But then again, I'm a Quentin Tarantino fan. He does that kind of stuff all the time. And, you know, it works for him because his movies, well, for one, they're movies. Two, they are weird, and you know this going into a Quentin. You know what you're getting when you go into a Quentin Tarantino movie. You're getting something weird in art.
Really avant-garde, cut to black kind of ending really worked was in Moon, except they didn't do it, and Moon was f***ing awesome.
Well,
so that's completely irrelevant.
But,
go watch Moon.
Moon, yes, Moon is freaking awesome, and they didn't do that to an extreme, because in Moon, there's a mystery, and then there's character development, and then there's a climax, and then there's a plot twist, and then there is a resolution, and then they keep going with it, and then there's an aftermath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They kind of explain what happens with the ending.
Yeah, there's a bit of an epilogue.
Yeah, that is one way of doing it, and if they would have walked the character off a cliff, no, that's not why you're there.
Right.
There are other mediums, there are other places where that is really good. That works really well.
Along this whole line of discussion of specifically series endings, that's what we're talking about here, like television series.
God, endings. Moon is good. I'm sorry.
I have actually gotten to the point nowadays where I, almost more often than not, I don't even watch the ending of a series because I've been so disappointed in the past with so many of them that I'm so jaded by it that I find myself, I'd say maybe even approaching 50% of the series that I really like and enjoy, I never do see the endings of them because I've just, again, it's there have been so many that were so disappointing.
You know,
it's just like, I don't want them to f*** it up. Unless I hear afterwards, they say, oh my God, the ending was so incredible. Then I'll go back and watch it.
You want to know how weird I am?
I know how weird you are, but yes.
There are actually a couple, and Wayne knows this, there's a couple of shows that I am a huge fan of, that I have not watched the last episode.
The reason
why I don't is not because I feel they screwed it up. It's because I don't want it to end.
Right there, brother. I have that issue. Because we were talking about,
I've never seen the last episode of Jericho.
We've brought this up before, and talking like with books and stuff like that, and other things, books, mm-hmm. TV series, and everything like that. I am the same way, Chad. Mm-hmm. I don't like for things to end. I love ongoing series, ongoing book series, and stuff like that, because I don't like that they end. I hate that there's a finite number. Like if there's 3 or 4 books or whatever, I hate that there's an ending to it. And if I'm eventually going to get to it and it's going to be done, there's no more.
You know,
it makes me sad.
I'm completely the opposite. And I'm not like that either, though. It's really weird because there are a couple of shows that I've really liked that I don't want to end, but I don't want them to keep telling a story either, because if you just keep massaging, I'll use the polite word, the story, over and over and over again, eventually it's just going to be like, come on, guys. Like a book series? I don't want a book series to be longer than three books. Because if it's longer than three books, it's just like...
I do, for some reason, I'm sick of the trilogy format because it has it has a specific flow to it, which is why if you're right... three, do me a favor and write four.
Yeah,
because it breaks you out of that trilogy. But you know, actually what I
like things to have like, a beginning, a middle, and an end. I like that a
lot. You know, the ending that I have to admit, in a guilty pleasure sort of way, is satisfying, particularly in movies, and is a ton of fun to watch, but
the happy?
I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Is happy. What I call the atom bomb ending, where they've created this huge problem and they're really not entirely sure how to solve it. And so an atomic bomb or some proxy thereof is used to solve the issue. Examples of this, the original Transformers movie, the cartoon one, they made Unicron. They had no idea how they were going to beat Unicron. So they open up the Matrix of Leadership, which works like an atomic bomb blows up Unicron. Independence Day, they literally use an atomic bomb to blow up the alien mothership. There are tons and tons and tons of movies in this way, including some that have come out recently, I don't want to spoil, where they don't know what to do, so they solve it by nuking it.
Perfect example of this is, and I really hate that I cannot remember the name of the movie. There's this 80s movie, it's an Australian movie, and it's modern day, and it follows this guy, and he basically...
Mad Max.
I was just about to say,
yes, though the other Australian movie that's not Priscilla Queen of the Desert, which is also an awesome movie, by the way, he lives in a major city. It's probably Sydney because that's where all the major cities are in Australia in the movies. But anyway, he wakes up one day and he's going around. Everyone disappears. It's like they're just gone. He is the only person left. He does not know why. Wakes up in the morning. Everyone's gone. All of his friends, all his family, no one, no person, no bodies, no disease, no signs of alien invasion. It's just like someone snapped their fingers. Everyone is gone. And it's about how he descends into madness, essentially, about how over time, I mean, he could survive easily. I mean, there's all this food and it's all this canned food and it's shelter and he has access to everything. And, you know, at first it's fun. He's driving around in sports cars and whatnot, but he goes crazy. And at the height of his insanity, he encounters another person. And it's about them and them being together. And then they encounter a third person, but that's it. There's no more than three people in the whole movie. And they're trying to figure out why, but that's not really what the movie's about. The movie's about them and the situation and their interactions and them growing and breaking as people. And the writers didn't know how to end it. So at the end of it, they go to science lab, press science buttons, and then in the last 5 minutes of the movie, blinding flash, and this guy is standing in an alien landscape. The end.
Okay.
And I'm just like, I was really into this movie, and it's like, bloop, what the f*** is this?
Well, you know,
credits roll.
I guess they could have set that up if they had set it up.
As a sequel or something?
Well, maybe not as a sequel or something like, that's the punchline, is they weren't on Earth. They were abducted.
That's not what it was, though.
I'm not defending it. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying it could have in some parallel universe worked if they had.
Oh, yeah, they could.
If they had set up to where that was the punchline and foreshadowed this and all kinds of other stuff, where these three people had been abducted and put in some kind of like
hollow chamber,
whatever,
experiments,
so the aliens could observe human interactions
he
and things like that.
He pressed the magic science button and he was bloop. And he was on this obviously alien world all by himself. And he's like, oh, wow. Credits roll.
Reasons.
Wow. Yes. Reasons. Accept.
All right.
So Pat, you
but didn't
only
that sound
like
such a good movie on the lead up? I mean, at least an interesting, different.
It did.
Engaging.
Yeah. Provided it was written by anyone but Stephen King, because he's notorious for kind of choking on those kinds of endings.
Well, and it wasn't like
he can do great setups. They kind of chokes on those endings.
And it wasn't horror or scary.
If you
or
disagree,
like
Chris at FearTheBoot.com.
Very psychological movie. God, so, I have no idea what the name of it was, though.
So, Pat, you were saying you don't like to read individual books or things with less than, say, three or four in the series. I'm the opposite.
Okay.
When I see a series and it's not done, I'm afraid there's not going to be an ending. I'm afraid the writer's going to die before it's done. When I see a TV show that's gone on, when I see a TV show that's gone on,
somebody else will pick it up. Jordan,
somebody's
written. I'm afraid of TV shows getting canceled without an ending because that's happened too many times to me.
Nowhere, man.
Have you heard of that? Gets more frustrating than a bad ending sometimes.
Have you seen the video? George R. R. Martin's Is Not Your Bitch,
the one with Neil Gaiman.
Yeah,
Yeah.
So basically this band wrote a song, George R. R. Martin, Write Like the Wind, which is about him writing the books as fast as he can before he dies. So they write this, and then Neil Gaiman answers a lot of fan mail. He writes this blog about it, too. And somebody asked him, do you think that George R. R. Martin should write faster? And some sort of question like that. And Neil Gaiman was like, I wanted to put this delicately and diplomatically, and I wanted to be really nice about it, but I really can't find a way to say it. George R. R. Martin is not your bitch. You know, he is crafting a book. He's making art, and he's not rushing it for you. And so anyway, at like Comic-Con or something like that, this band that wrote this song was playing, and right in the middle of playing this song, George R. R. Martin walks out onto stage, grabs their guitar, and smashes it. And then Neil Gaiman comes out behind him and makes them apologize to George R. R. Martin and say, George R. R. Martin, you are not our bitch. It's great.
All right, yeah. So here's how I want to tie this back to role-playing games. For anyone who's... Mm-hmm.
What?
Yes. For anyone who's been listening to this,
liked our new movie format.
Well, yeah, it's all good, but I was going somewhere role-playing related with this. Morgan wrote in to us and asked a question about how do you end a campaign?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, one of the things that I realized pretty quickly when thinking about all the campaigns that I've played in that ended, whether short, long, whatever. Okay, so anything beyond one-shots. So chapters, epics, whatever, okay? And I think this brought out what is both a wonderful and terrible symbiosis, which is relationship between role-playing games and video games. Role-playing games inspire video games. I mean, look, let's be honest. Basic RPG setup, especially prior to the more action-based RPGs of having stats and hit points and it rolls virtual dice to determine whether you hit or not and all kinds of stuff. Obviously taken straight from role-playing games. Role-playing games, in return, tend to steal some of their things from various video games. They kind of seem to take each other's lead. But one of the places where I think role-playing games have not per se gotten it completely wrong, but I think it has become too fixed of a trope, is when you play a role-playing game, it's kind of like playing through one of the side-scrolling fighting games. You work your way through increasingly difficult encounters, which may or may not be combat-based, but oftentimes are. You fight tougher and tougher enemies, all the way up to the final boss. I think a lot of role-playing games take that tact. You follow through, and the campaign ends when you beat up the biggest, most powerful guy in the plot line. And thinking through my own games, I am guilty of this. The finales for a lot of my games, not all of them, but the finales for a lot of my finished campaigns have been... They get to the biggest, baddest-ass guy, and they...
Are you a bad enough dude to take on Dan's boss fight?
You are a bad dude.
You saved the president.
And they burn that person down. That's it. There might be an epilogue or something like that, but that basically wraps the whole thing up. I even talked about in the last episode, ending one of my Transformer campaigns, how I had spent some time trying to figure out what I want the bad guy's death scene to look like, how to get the right amount of dramatic without being cheesy, and I think I did it really well. But I'm also going to admit, them fighting the bad guy and beating him down and he dies in some spectacular fashion is hardly original. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say you can't end an RPG that way, because that's foolish. You know, one of the things we say again and again on the show is you just got to keep things in balance. But what I did want to do with this time is to draw out the possibility that you can have a satisfying ending to a long story that is not about combat. All right. So now we're going to move to role-playing games. But as a way of kind of creating some examples, I gave the people around the mic some homework, which Chad Schluff back off on you guys, the audience. So congratulations on whitewashing a fence.
That's thinking right there.
And but what I'm after is some examples from other forms of media where a major story ended. And what I want to stress here by the ending is a story's primary climax, not the epilogue, did not consist of either violent conflict between one or more parties or a large object, large in importance here, so the Death Star, the Ring of Power, being destroyed. So the story ended in another way, okay? I'll go ahead and throw one out. I'll go first. One of the ones on my list, the Tom Hanks movie, Castaway. If you've not seen the movie, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and spoil it because it's past our spoiler range. But The guy crashes on an island.
I haven't seen it, actually.
I haven't either.
Oh,
I'll go ahead and spoil it.
I'll give you a bit of interesting movie trivia you might enjoy, Chase. I know you like movie trivia. Mm-hmm. It took a while for Tom Hanks to be convinced to even be in that movie, because he's like, I do not see how you can have a 2 or whatever hour it is movie where there's only one character.
Yeah.
And it took a lot to convince him to take that role. But
there was some additional. There was 2 characters.
Yeah, the other one doesn't count.
Oh, come on.
But at the end.
Actually, I actually disagree, because by the
okay, that's not the point of this episode.
Oh, come on. Wank, wank, wank.
The point of the episode is that at the end, he does not get off the island.
That's all I ever hear from you.
He does not get off the island by killing a pirate king or nuking the island.
Thus,
or
I've never seen the movie.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
The point being, he leaves the island. He's simply rescued. He goes back. He attempts to readjust to society. Finds he's struggling to do that. And then goes from there. It ends with him trying to go off and find new love. It was a character ending.
You would actually love the ending, because it's somewhat Tarantino-esque. Because...
Does somebody get in the ass?
No. Not on screen. Poor Wilson. Anyway, the thing that I wanted through the whole goddamn movie is I want to know what was in that package, and you don't get to know. He delivers it at the end.
Because that's not.
And then that's the end of the movie. And that's why I'm saying it's sort of Tarantino-esque, because there's a package involved. You don't know what's in it.
There it is. So there's a movie like that, not like that movie, but it's Lost in Translation.
Oh yeah. That's a good one.
Love it.
I love that movie. I've seen it. Yeah. I love the movie.
And it pertains to this.
That's where I began my love affair with ScarJo. Yeah. So
it's about two people who are in Japan, who are Americans, who have no concept of Japanese culture and find it very weird, and they are very out of place. But these two people have nothing in common. If they were back in the U.S., they would never be friends, never talk to each other, never even look at each other because of who and what they are. In Japan, they're thrown together because they're the only Americans around. They meet and they become very close friends because of that. And how this ties to what Pat is saying at the end, they are like saying goodbye to each other, and Bill Murray leans into her and whispers something into her ear. Not like a word, I mean, just like several sentences, whispers that into her ear. And then she kind of has a reaction, and then they say goodbye and walk away. And you never know what he says. No one but those two people in real life know what they say, because Bill Murray made up everything he said. It wasn't in the script, and they refused to tell anybody what they said. I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so neat.
I hate the sound of that. It would drive me crazy.
Well, it kind of did, but you know what? The movie was so poignant and powerful.
Right. Let's say right there. So endings to movie. All right. So Wayne, an ending to something that did not end with somebody getting killed or something being blown up.
Star Trek IV. They brought the whales back.
That did not end with any major combat.
The whole point was a peaceful ending.
Yeah.
That's why it was one of the worst Star Treks.
So I cheated at this. Yeah. I crowdsourced all my answers. Mm-hmm. I got on our forums and I asked the question that Dan asked us. In fact, I was so lazy, I just cut and paste Dan's question.
He put up a Kickstarter at a $1 donation. You get to give an answer. At a $5 donation, he'll credit it. At a $25 donation, he'll ask you how to pronounce your name.
Uh-huh. You got it, man.
At a $100 donation, we'll just call you Mihao, whether that's appropriate or not.
I got...
At the $1,000 level... We'll do zero to publish the third time.
That's right. So I got 4 pages of responses. Well, I have to drive Pat under the bus here because it's so funny. Pat leaned into me because he's looking at me, you know, looking at these responses on my phone. And he's like, hey, come here. I didn't do anything.
Well, yeah.
Give me some of your answers from your thread.
So Dan put this up sometime today.
I got four pages.
I believe sometime this morning.
Answers,
and so. I was in meetings all day. So like at 5 o'clock, I log on to the forum and see, here's your homework. And I'm like ready. I'm shutting down, ready to leave.
Blah, blah, blah. First world problems. So, Chad, give me one of the better ones.
Okay. Actually, I really like this one because it's short, sweet, and hard to beat. It is from Lord Fowl.
Okay.
Lassie comes home. Dog comes home. Everyone cries.
Yeah.
There you go.
Very different than the ending of Old Yeller, which did end with somebody being killed.
That is a violent ending.
That is a violent ending.
You should link this thread in the show notes, because it is 4 pages of tons and tons of stuff.
To reemphasize the point of this exercise is what we are trying to do is to demonstrate that there can be variety in the ways that you end your role-playing games. That if you are telling a role-playing game that's about more than just clear and loot, clear and loot, clear and loot, the game does not have to end with a dragon or a demon or whatever. That if you have a story that's about plot and setting and characters, what we're trying to point out through these movies and TV shows and books that we're going to be quoting here is that you can take a look at what you've got and you can conclude the story in a variety of ways. Now, if a dragon is what's relevant to your story, fine, end the campaign that way. That's great. But it is also possible to have a great ending. If, for example, Chad, let's go back to that campaign that you and I played some years back, where you played the character who kind of from the start had set out how he wanted to die. Mm-hmm. I was playing the guy that was in the powered armor trying to build a military. That campaign did not end with a big conflict.
No.
That campaign ended basically as every one of the characters reached their own goals in the most tragic of ways. There was one guy who was playing an alien who'd been enslaved most of his life, and in death he found freedom. There was one guy who was really trying to face his own demons and ultimately failed and succumbed to them, which was your character.
Yep.
There was another guy who really was just kind of a nameless soldier in the war, and he died an insignificant death. He just was strafed by a fighter and was gone. And my character was the one character hanging on against all hope and desperation. And the story ends with him alone holding on against all hope and desperation. And that's where it ends.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens to this character. But nonetheless, if you had been there to see it, even though you say, wait a minute, from a plot standpoint, that's BS. You didn't.
No, it's great.
But from a character standpoint,
what happened to your character isn't the point. And I know you understand this, so I keep saying you, and I'm motioning emphatically at you when I say this, but obviously you understand. The point of it was what was going on with the character, not what happened
and
to the character.
And something somebody else pointed out, I wish I could attribute this, but I don't have the forum thread in front of me, but somebody else pointed out, or maybe this was even in the recording, maybe it was Beth who said this, I don't know, whoever it was, forgive me. When Bunker said that, thank you.
Archie?
But what this person said is that if you look at any story and you say, well, I want everything, you know, wrapped up and ended, there is always the question of what happens next. No matter how you end it, I don't care what ending you give me, there is always the question of, well, what would happen next? You know, Batman captures the Joker and goes back home. What happens when the Joker gets back out? I mean, goodness gracious, look at Neverending Story. The universe is destroyed. And yet something more happens.
Yeah.
That's not where there is always the question. You cannot have an ending that literally ends things with an absolute boom, done. Nothing more can possibly be said. And so what you're looking for here is an ending that accomplishes the goals of your campaign. In the case of the campaign we talked about, the goal was to see where these characters would go as people.
Yeah.
And we found out the unfortunate reality was they went nowhere. And it wasn't
worse.
It wasn't per se a story about futility because we had a lot of goals that we accomplished along the way.
Yeah.
But their personal journey, their journey of growth, that part of it was a futile treadmill. And so that's kind of the point I want to make here as we do these things is take these as examples or models of how you can end a role-playing campaign. And Chad, I will absolutely, if you can send me a link to it, I will link whatever thread you've got this in so people can read some of these for examples. I think, did I just do the last one? Who just did the last one?
Well, I'll do another one.
All right, go ahead, Chad, you do another one.
So I'm going to talk about a common thread that is running in this thread that many people have mentioned. I think D3M410, that flows off the tongue. Thanks, dude.
Meow.
Meow said, insert any courtroom dramas here. And then people spun off of that, too. And then they said, mysteries. So think about a mystery like Agatha Christie, Hercule Poirot, Sherlock Holmes, whatever.
One of the things I had from one of mine was Caves of Steel by Isaac Asimov.
Yeah.
It is the mystery of, you know, who did the murder.
The climax, that violence, that a big explosion happened. Now we're going to start playing the game, which is solving the mystery, talking to people, investigating, looking at motives, seeing how these things affect us and how we can affect them.
A change of fate.
Yes.
The uncovering of information. Yeah, actually, another one that kind of ended like that. Twilight Zone episodes do this all the time. It's a cookbook.
Yeah.
Another example of this, an Arthur C. Clarke book. Now, this unfortunately...
really scary?
This unfortunately has our favorite ending of Turn Into a Beam of Light, Travel a Galaxy, Childhood's End. For those not familiar with the story, the way childhood ends is there's an alien race that has been sent to monitor human evolution, and humans are apparently a race that is capable of transcending to this other layer of existence that this race can't. And so they've kind of been employed by these other already transcended races to sort of shepherd and guide and watch over these species as they're on their way to that destination. And the book ends with what's left of humanity, because some people have like died off and stuff, but what's left of humanity transcending to another existence. Let me give you guys another example. Here's a story that I would wager almost everyone listening to the show knows, even if they don't know the full story. And I'm going to use this one here. It is a religious story, but I'm using it as literature in this case, not as a religious text. The story of Jonah. Let's go through that story and how it ends. Okay, everybody knows the first part. You know, he's told to go to Nineveh. He hops on the boat, runs, you know, gets eaten by the sea creature. The Hebrew word there is a little bit flexible. Not going to get into that. Point being, ends up back in Nineveh, does the preaching. Now, that's not the end of the story. Mm-hmm. Now, even if it was, that would still kind of make a point of Jonah has a character journey where right. he goes from disobedience to repentance to obedience. There's a redemption of sorts of his character. That's actually not even where the story ends. The story actually ends with he preaches in Nineveh. He's a really, to be honest, from the way the text kind of reads, kind of a bigoted and really kind of bloodthirsty guy. So he sort of goes through and preaches.
What douche.
Honestly, he's not that great of a guy. If you really read the story, he then goes up on a hill and sits down to watch God blow up the city. But the people repent. And so God doesn't. And so nothing happens. And then what happens at the very end of the story is as he's sitting there in the heat, because it's the Middle East, very hot. And so what happens there is a plant grows up and he's sitting under it for shade. And then God sends along a parasitic worm that cuts down, basically chews up and destroys this plant and takes away his shade. And the point of the story that God makes him at the end is, look, you didn't create that plant. You didn't nurture it. You don't get to pick how it ends. And so the story ends with kind of Jonah really, in a sense, going from fallen to redeemed to kind of back to having to really kind of figure out who he is. And the story ends with basically God saying, I don't care what you thought of these people. They repented. I accept that. You need to get over it and move on with your life. There's an end to a very, very well-known story, even if people don't necessarily know that last part of it. Only thing hurt in the making of that story is one plant.
Yeah.
So one of my two favorite endings of all time is the ending to Planet of the Apes. Yes, something was blown up, but you're that right, was years ago. That's not the that's point not, of that, it.
Yeah, that's not what occurs
the point
at the end.
Of it is finding this greater truth that he didn't realize. There is what's left of the Statue of Liberty. He is on Earth. And that is the big reveal that it fades from. And I remember the first time I watched the movie, when it gets to that point, I was left thinking, well, what? It ends there? There's no hope. He's never making it home. And I remember thinking of it. It was just such an interesting ending that way. I kind of like that. I've never found a way to work it into a game or anything that you find that last bit of knowledge and end on that, something that you didn't know that's always been true from the beginning.
I'll do one as well. Logan's Run, the original. I actually really love this movie. As cheesy as it is, it's a product of its time, and we can get past that. It's a really good movie. It has some neat themes to it. The ending of it is there's a big running street battle and all kind of people are getting shot and everything's blowing up. But that's not the ending. The ending is that afterwards, they can't live in the underground city anymore. And so all the people, because the whole thing is everybody dies at the age of 30. Everyone is killed at the age of 30. And they are reborn as another person. And it's this big lie that's being perpetrated throughout their society. So all the people in there are young and they've been doing this for generations. They've never seen an old person. And at the end of it, their city is destroyed and all the young people are leaving. And there is one old man who's sitting out there waiting for him that Logan had encountered earlier in the story when he left the city. And they have never seen an old person before. And at the end of it, all these young people walk up and they're like touching his beard and his gray hair and they're touching his wrinkles and they're just fascinated. The point of the story is that their entire society is destroyed and they're not afraid of an old person. The old person doesn't represent death to them anymore, or deceit or lies or whatever it is that represent. It's something they're new and they're reborn. And that's the ending of Logan's Run.
Here's another one. Pseudo historical novel, James Clavell's Shogun.
Yes.
Which is based roughly on the war for the shogunate that occurred in Japan, I believe in the 1600s. If my history's off, I apologize, but I believe it was around the 1600s.
You will go out to the garden and do the honorable thing.
I will. It's actually funny. I was just playing a video game that's kind of meant for kids. And at one point, a guy kind of kneels down and asks one of the other characters to be his second. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And he does.
Nice.
Good night.
Another subject for another time, but this is one of the first video games I've played that was kind of, you know, friendly and happy. And there's not Tales of Vesperia. Mm. And it's not just like you kill monsters. There are things in the game where you are murdering people.
Nice.
I mean, it's strangely dark. Anyways, but that's not our point here. All right. Here's one. Shogun based on, I believe, 1600s Japanese feudal society. And it's all the characters in there are at least loosely based off real historical figures. For example, John Blackthorne, the main protagonist of the story, is actually based on a character named William Adams, whose life actually ends in a very different way. Yeah. The guys in Japan actually end up using him. They let him get his boat back, and he goes on, and they use him to kind of travel around and take care of some things for him. But in the book basically ends not with the fight for the shogunate. It ends before the fight for the shogunate occurs. And it's really about this character journey by which John Blackthorne kind of integrates into Japanese society, but then kind of comes out of that honeymoon period and realizes its faults, but decides he loves it anyway. He comes up with a purpose for himself, and the guy that will become shogun, because of the fact that the society is so political, it is so dangerous, it is so filled with lies and deceits and backstabbing and, oh, your wife and daughter are perfectly fine. They're at my place looking at the cherry blossoms, which means if you annoy me, I'll kill them. But I can't say that in polite society. Oh, yeah. And that's the world he lives in. And this guy realizes that John Blackthorne, being a guy from another culture who's not caught up in the politics, who doesn't even think that way, is the one and only person in the world that he can really see as a friend. The end of the book is John Blackthorne finds a home, and the guy that will become shogun finds his first real friend.
Yeah,
that's the climax of the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, and I like that one because unlike many of these, not all of these, but unlike many of these we've rattled off, it's not a negative ending.
No,
it's a very positive ending. I mean, there are some people that die along the way, and it's not all sunshine and roses. But my point being, the punchline to the story, at least as far as the central protagonist is concerned, is generally a positive one.
I had a few others that were positive ones, but I wanted to hit on one that I think is very satisfying in the comic. Basically, it would just piss me off if it ever happened in the game. Watchmen. Everyone builds up to the final battle. They go there, and it's already...
Doesn't occur.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen. Basically, the bad guy just says, I wouldn't be telling you my plan if I hadn't already done it. And they're too late.
Well,
and that would piss me off in a game.
If Watchmen were run as a game, and I'm not talking... in the same universe, or, hey, we're playing the Watchmen characters and I'm kind of running this Watchmen thing. If you had never heard of or ran Watchmen before and somebody sat down and I'm like, okay, we're going to run this superhero thing and it's going to be a role-playing game and Watchmen doesn't exist and this is my thing. It wouldn't work as a game because it's a deconstruction. The whole thing is a deconstruction. Mm-hmm. It's all about screwing the characters over in different ways and taking these characters where the expectations of the characters are completely subverted over and over and over again. Now,
we talk about some endings like this here, and I think this is, it's the warning. If you want to go down this surprise ending, careful.
I like a little bit of expectation subversion. I more like twisting a genre than actually subverting expectations in a game, because people are kind of relying on that. There's the rules of a game, which are what is written in a book and how to roll dice and how to slap somebody and yada, yada, yada. But then there's the social rules of the game, the how the story works. I mean, have you ever ran a game for somebody who's never played a role-playing game in their life and has no clue what it is? You don't think these rules exist of how the story works and how you interact with the story and how you interact with other players until you sit down at a table with that person.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's one of the things I love about playing with a group that consists of my family members.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what you're supposed to do.
Right.
They don't understand that a halfling can't be Southern.
Yeah.
And it is freaking awesome because you know what? A halfling can be Southern. I am now fully convinced.
Yes.
It works wonderfully.
But that kind of thing, that doesn't work with something like Watchmen, where because it's a deconstruction, it is a subversion of expectations over and over and over and over and over again. In the end, I believe it just would piss the players off. And I don't mean the universe, and I don't mean the characters. I mean running that as a game if you didn't know what it was.
The experience would piss me off.
Yeah, I think you have to be very careful when you're trying to come up with some kind of an alternate way of ending a campaign. I think it's a great idea to do so. It doesn't always have to be the violent, but I think that what is most key important is whatever you do, you need to make sure that the characters have a lot to do in it and yes. with it. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, some of the examples that you guys have thrown out here tonight have been like the surprise endings. I don't want to play a campaign for, you know, a couple months to up to a year, and all of a sudden at the end, Wayne sits down and says, it's an alien backdrop. Whatever it is, it needs to be dependent upon the characters doing it.
I think a good example of that is one of the ones I have on my list is most of the Back to the Future series, where the ending is trying to achieve the goal of going back to the future.
Sure.
I think something like that can easily be done in a game. There is a goal the party is trying to achieve that is a difficult goal. There are things trying to stop them, but it's not necessarily
He doesn't have a boss fight
right
with time or something.
Another one like that where it's not a violent ending and it's not this big powerful climax like that, Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Moon is a Harsh Mistress is, you know, your moon colony and their struggle for independence and they have a sort of war and there's a big fight and they win beginning of section 3. And it's this whole other book about, okay, you have independence. Now what? What do you do with that? I mean, you just don't celebrate in the streets for a couple days. Sure. But
then what?
Who keeps the lights on? Who takes the garbage out? You know, that sort of thing. And it doesn't get into the mundanity of that, but it talks about the characters who won this war. Well, now they've gone from soldier to politician. And it isn't about winning fights, political fights. It isn't changing the realm of the fights, but it's more of an exploration of what do you do?
Voyage of the Dawn Treader. The book, not the movie. The movie does have a boss fight at the end. But in the book, they're on an expedition to find an answer to certain questions. They reach the end of the expedition. They have the answers. They've solved the mystery. Some really cool stuff happens. There's been all kinds of character growth, particularly in one character. And it ends there. Now, let's tie this back to role-playing games more specifically. Pat, I think you offered excellent advice there that deserves repeating, which is whatever ending you're putting in, it has to be organic to the game itself, the plot, the setting, the characters. I think it also has to feel satisfying to the players. I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Pat, that I think there is a certain level of risk in just sitting down and saying, well, I'm just going to dictate this ending. And really, in truth, it doesn't fit in organically with what the players wanted out of the game, with what the characters were striving toward. It has to make sense. Now, that doesn't have to be a fight, but it does have to make sense. Chad and I's campaign that was about that character journey where we kind of realized these characters maybe weren't capable of outgrowing themselves. That was what we wanted. We were all satisfied with that.
Yeah.
Some people would find that game frustrating. There's a BattleTech campaign that I ran some years back. The point of it was this guy builds up this huge resistance group, realizes over time he doesn't have very good control over it. And by the end of it, the organization's kind of falling apart. And the players really at that point kind of have to decide what do they do? Because there's this whole ideal they were standing behind. Do they continue that ideal? Do they retire? Do they go become mercenaries? Do they try and get whoever's still loyal to the idea and continue the fight? You know, this really still depends very heavily upon the characters. So I'm curious, I just gave two, but do you guys have any campaigns where you've seen an ending, whether a final end or a chapter end or something like that, that did not fit into the we killed someone or blew something up trope, but nonetheless was still a very satisfying ending to everyone involved?
I actually have a good example of the first campaign that I played, and this was the long-running campaign. So for this one, it was really the ending of a story arc, and this will hold near and dear to this table because it's come up. It's kind of funny how things go in cycles. But in this one, I was playing a paladin, and the buildup of everything that we were doing was leading us into investigating what ended up being there was a tribe of gnolls that were encroaching on human lands and had killed humans and whatever like that. So our task was to sort of deal with the problem. Instead of just going in and wiping out this tribe of gnolls, I actually used diplomacy instead. And then we ended up establishing a treaty with them and creating a peace. And that was the end of that arc. It could have easily been that, yes, we're going to go in and wage wholesale war on these, on the gnolls, but we didn't. And that was very satisfying for me. In fact, it's one that I remember very well because never before have we done this. Everything up to then had been, it's a monster, you kill it. So, but in here it wasn't, you know, there was more to it. There was more depth. I enjoyed that because you learn something about yourself, your character, and the world at large that you didn't know before. Lose some innocence and lose some ignorance.
I would say that, actually, to pimp myself here, my game Lucid, because the point of Lucid is not beating up bad guys. And it's not even getting into fights. Technically, you're the bad guy. You're the criminal doing something, but you're the protagonist, and the antagonist is the mark, is the guy you're trying to steal something from. And so you enter his mind and his dreams, and how you get it, the stuff from him, is not beating up his inner demons or beating up him psychically, because that's actually how you lose the game. What you do is you gain his trust. You find out things about him in the first half of the game. You take this information that you learn and go into the second half of the game, and you earn his trust with it. And in the third half of the game, you take that trust that you have and you get him to give you the information that you're trying to get. And then you take that information and get out. And in the process, you end up solving his problems for him. He has like some deep emotional demon that he has, like maybe he had an abusive father. Well, you learn that about him, and then you earn his trust, and then together you get him to deal with his father in different ways. And there's tons and tons of different ways you can do this and different things you can go about with it. But the end of the game is that you help someone and then steal their stuff and then go away and they never know it. But that's why you play a criminal scumbag in the game. So
yeah, I got nothing. When I think back to the campaigns I've played, the arcs that have ended, it's pretty much always ended in the big fight. For any that I've played.
And that is, I have to admit, like I said, sitting here thinking back through most of the campaigns I've either run or played in, most of them did end with a video game boss fight.
Most of them didn't end at all, but the ones that did end...
The ones that did end. So, but anyways, I really do hope that you guys are listening. I mean, don't feel compelled to end a campaign another way simply for the sake of any other way. Don't ever do anything that's just that gratuitous. But I do hope something this is giving you to consider is that campaigns don't have to be that way. Role-playing games can be as diverse as any other form of storytelling.
Right.
And I really hope that you guys, you know, will take some time to kind of mull over some of this and consider that, you know, it's possible the game you're running right now, it may really make better sense and be more satisfying to everyone involved if it ends with some moment of character or plot or setting that doesn't necessarily involve somebody getting punched or having their base blown up.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. It's been fun as always. We hope that you guys will have a wonderful week. Be safe, be happy, and have great games.
Bunker.
And everyone tell Chris how much Lost sucked.
And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.